Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to the one and only Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, we're a couple more days removed now from the Packers' 26-17 loss to the Saints, as now Green Bay is into its bye week. And as you look back on that game again, if there's a statistic, and there were a number of statistics that didn't look so good for Green Bay, but if there's one that really stands out in terms of one that you'd really like to get fixed for the next game and moving forward for Brett Hundley, it's when you look at the pass completions, Jordy Nelson, Davante Adams, Randall Cobb, and Marty Bennett, your four biggest playmakers in the passing game, only touched the ball a total of seven times. And Mike McCarthy, you know, essentially said Monday afternoon, hey, that's not Packers football. We have to do better than that. And you know, this is something that is going to be a focus for Brett Hundley, is to get the ball into the hands of those playmaking receivers.
Yeah, and I think it'll be for both him and Mike McCarthy. They're going to be looking at different ways over these next week and a half. You know, whether it's not, you know, just Hundley doing his own thing independently, McCarthy and his staff doing some of the self-scout stuff across the hall that they like to do. They're going to try to find ways to get these receivers and, you know, guys like Martellus Bennett, Richard Rodgers, and Lance Kendricks more involved in this offense. Because, again, as we've said yesterday and multiple times before, that is where the strength of this team is. Aaron Jones is a phenomenal running back, and you've seen in the past what Ty Montgomery can do. That's the quickest outlet in order of moving the ball out of Brett Hundley's hands. But there also is the passing element. And for them to be able to utilize Davante Adams, you see obviously what Jordy Nelson possesses as a receiver. Randall Cobb, when you can get the ball in his hands six, seven, eight times a game, historically, that's usually translated into a victory. So that's the challenge, and it's going to be a challenge for McCarthy. It'll be a challenge for Hundley in seeing exactly how they can reshape this offense to still utilize those guys, but with a different quarterback under center.
Yeah, it's interesting because we talked all last week about how this is going to be an evolutionary process here with the offense and with Brett Hundley. And there was a lot of talk about, you know, you build a game plan around a new quarterback's strengths. But one of the things that, you know, sometimes can go a little bit awry with that is you focus a little bit too much on the plays yeah. that maybe he's comfortable with and not the players that you have. It's an old saying, you know, and it's not just Vic Ketchman, my former colleague, who likes to say it. Coaches around the NFL say it all the time, players, not plays. Right. And I think the Packers are going to get back to focusing on those players that can make plays for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially I think when you look at how that really sort of plays off the run game and how the Packers are able to use Jordy Nelson, Davante Adams outside and the way that they can mix guys up. To be quite honest with you, I felt like they were just hitting their stride in the passing game when Aaron Rodgers got hurt. You saw Martellus Bennett getting more involved yep. earlier in downs, a couple explosive plays from Lance Kendricks, the success they have had when they're working with those two tight end packages. And then even though obviously Randall Cobb dealt with that chest injury for a bit, the receivers have been relatively healthy. So for Nelson and Adams and that core, I think trying to see exactly how they're going to be able to fit and model their game to complement Brett Hundley is also another aspect of this. It is a two-way street, both sides getting that chemistry down.
Yeah, and to be fair here, I don't want it to sound like we're saying or that anybody is saying that Mike McCarthy and Brett Hundley were ignoring the Packers' playmakers, because if you look at how the game unfolded yeah. and the Packers only had 50 offensive snaps, which is not enough, and they didn't convert enough on third down, but they took a deep shot to Jordy Nelson on the play-action bootleg. You had the free play shot early in the game on the offsides to Davante Adams, which I actually thought was pass interference on the Saints. It could have yeah. been a big gainer there on a penalty. And you also had Martellus Bennett draw pass interference late in the second quarter down the sideline for a 25-yard gain or so that almost got the Packers into field goal range to get points there before halftime. So I don't want this to sound like, you know, that those guys were totally ignored, but not enough connections, not enough times did things really come together for Hundley to get comfortable and define those one or two guys in a given game within a given game plan that he could rely on.
Well, and again, I go back to that game against the Cowboys, and I was saying I thought that was one of the most complete performances they've had because of how they were able to move the ball and keep down and distance favorable. when you struggle to get the downfield passing game going plus 8, 9, 10 yards, that's where you're starting to look at more third and long situations, particularly if defenses start queuing in on the run game and trying to shut that down early and down. So I really believe with Jordy Nelson and some of these guys that the stuff they can do downfield, it may not have all became apparent in that game, but I think it's certainly in the cards for them. The key now is just trying to figure out exactly what Brett Hundley is comfortable with in those downfield plays, what kind of passes, what kind of routes he likes, and trying to tailor that offense to him. Like I said before, there are positives to be gleaned from this. There are things I think that went well. It's just that there wasn't enough of them to get that offense rolling.
Yeah, when you have 181 rushing yards in a game and 131 from your rookie running back and Aaron Jones, that needs to translate to more opportunities for those playmakers. That's a running game that the Packers need to take advantage of in the passing game, and that's the next step maybe for this offense now with Brett Hundley.
Yeah, absolutely, because really that complement is where everything starts for them and being able to really chisel away and break apart a defense.
Yeah, all right. With that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. And Wes, shifting gears to the defensive side for a minute. One thing that's been a problem for the Packers this season, unfortunately, and it's cost them in a couple of instances, is getting stuck with only 10 defenders on the field, having substitution problems. And we saw in the Saints game, it cost the Packers a timeout early on that they had to burn on defense. The third and one from the 12-yard line in the red zone, Mark Ingram ends up running basically untouched for a touchdown against a 10-man defense. And we saw it against the Dallas Cowboys. Ezekiel Elliott, his longest run of the day down in Dallas was 25 yards against only 10 men on the field. It's a frustrating thing. There's no excuse for it, but we have found out a little bit of an explanation, and again, it's not an excuse, but it's an explanation as to how this has happened. Why don't you give us a little bit of a rundown on what we heard from Dom Capers?
Well, and I said this in Tuesday's Insider Inbox, too. Here's the thing, Mike. People love to quantify the unquantifiable. They want to have answers for everything that happens on the field. I think there has to be an understanding there's 11 guys out there and things can get, you know, miscommunication happens in any walk of life. The big challenge the Packers, I think, have had right now is twofold. One has been the injury bug, and it hit them hard, I think, with Morgan Burnett going out.
Yeah.
Burnett is, in addition to being a fine football player and a sure tackler and doing everything right in terms of really being able to make that nitro package work for them, he's also the guy that's wore the communication headset this year. And yeah, they do work in Blake Martinez into that. They work in HaHa Clinton Dix. But in most given plays, if all things are equal and Morgan Burnett is healthy, he's the guy relaying the calls from Dom Capers. So Burnett goes out in that game. I believe it was against Dallas. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I think that's correct.
You're in that stadium on the road. HaHa Clinton Dix has to put it on. The next week, HaHa Clinton Dix is wearing that helmet at US Bank Stadium. Wore it again this past week. That still is, it's a challenge when you don't have your veteran leader there. And it also, as Caper said, it kind of takes Clinton Dix out of his element as well, as far as what he does well, communicating on the back end. So it really stresses all parts of the defense. The second thing I thought that has really led to this is the injuries at inside backer. Joe Thomas has missed some time already with an ankle injury. Jake Ryan exits with a migraine. So that took the Packers out of their base package and their nickel package. And this was already a base package that was going through some upheaval due to some of the injuries they had at cornerback.
Right.
So when you add up all those dominoes and you throw that all out there, it's going to lead to some of those situations. Now, you have to still be able to overcome that. It's not an excuse. It's an explanation. But I think that's one of the things that when you try to understand exactly what's happening, that's one of the things that sort of bled into it a little bit.
Yeah, one of the things that's gotten a little chaotic on the sidelines, and Mike McCarthy's talked about this a little bit, is the number of players who have gotten injured during a game. They're getting checked out on the sidelines, so they're temporarily out of the game. Then maybe they're cleared to go back in, or maybe they're not. And so you have different players in these different personnel groupings, and then sometimes things get mixed up as to who's available to go in right. and who isn't, and then all of a sudden you get caught with either too many or too few guys on the field. It's something that every team deals with, and the Packers need to do a better job dealing with it. That's really the bottom line. As we said, there's really not an excuse for it, as far as I'm concerned, in professional football for that to happen and for it to happen multiple times. But just because it's come up so much and we're seeing it in our insider inbox and the fans are asking, we wanted to provide that explanation as to really this is what it is. It's really the injury confusion on the sidelines that the Packers haven't dealt with very well. Now, this is something that certainly a bye week you can get this thing rectified, not just by players getting healthy, which will help, but also with the coaches looking over all the situations, how all the communication occurred, how the miscommunications occurred, and hopefully the Packers get that straightened out. But I want to follow up on another thing you said, and talking about Morgan Burnett, and I wrote this in our Insider Inbox column this week. I think the Packers, and the fans for that matter, you have to be a little bit careful of what I think is a dangerous mindset to think that as soon as Morgan Burnett is back on the field, as valuable and as important as he is to the defense, that suddenly everything's going to be fixed. It's not going to be. Morgan Burnett is not responsible for the things that have gone wrong on defense. He will be a big part of this when he comes back, but the other players need to know what their responsibility is as well. It doesn't just fall on Morgan.
Yeah, totally. And I think it also goes back to, and I don't know what the norm is going to be for the Packers. We'll have to see. I mean, in a perfect world, you want to be able to have your guys playing their normal positions. I think you look at cornerback in specific, the amount of times you'd even see a guy like Lindsey Pipkins comes into a game and he's playing inside and outside due to injuries. We've seen it with Demarius Randall in the past too. I think the biggest thing that Morgan Burnett symbolizes when he's there is an ability to get back to playing how they were earlier in the season. And then maybe, just maybe, if you can keep some of these guys out there, if you can keep some of these cornerbacks healthy, I think that really can be a good starting point for them. And then also, we talked about it earlier this week, but Vince Beagle, if you get him back here soon, potentially the spark he could provide in the pass rush with fresh legs. This is a good time, and it always is a cliche, but this is a good time for the Packers to have this bye week to see if they can compose some of themselves again, see if they can get healthy again, and try to put their best foot forward after the bye week. Because personally, that first game against the Seahawks in week one, I thought that defense had a lot of potential in being able to show that adjustment in how they're playing those hybrid tendencies now, when healthy, could work.
Yeah, and there was a lot of potential on defense that we saw in the first half against New Orleans against a future Hall of Fame quarterback. You get two interceptions, you hold them to 7 points. That was a good defensive performance for a half.
Right.
But you don't beat a Hall of Fame quarterback just in one half. And the Packers now have to extend what they started against New Orleans into a full game.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all right. With that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, as we take a look quickly at the state of the NFL, particularly NFC, as we're here in Week 8 with the Packers bye, there's only one team in the entire conference and in the entire league, for that matter, with less than two losses. On Monday Night Football, the Philadelphia Eagles moved to 6-1 with a home victory over the Washington Redskins. And they are the only team in the league with less than two losses. Are the Philadelphia Eagles suddenly the team to beat, or is it still too early to label somebody as that?
You know, it's a good question. It's a fair question because you have a pretty sizable sample size at this point. My only reservation about crowning them, an ode to Denny Green,
crown them,
is the fact that they got off to a fast start last year and they crumbled. Now, Carson Wentz is a year older and is looking like a legitimate offensive player of the year type caliber player.
Boy, does he ever.
Making the right decisions, looking wise beyond his years, not letting the spotlight be too bright for him. He's the leader of that team, and they go as he goes, which is impressive for a young man like that to be wearing that captain's logo, captain's patch. But we did see this last year. We saw them get off to a fast start last year. Can they maintain it? just based on the nature of that division, I think it's possible, and I think it is going to be there will be an avenue there for them to run away with this thing. But it is going to come down to that young quarterback playing well, Doug Peterson keeping his head in this thing, and give him credit across the board. I mean, Nelson Aguilar, you remember last year we were talking about him. He was getting benched. He's going to get cut, all these other things. He becomes a playmaker again. Zach Ertz is becoming a top tight end of this league.
Yep.
They have a lot of ability there. Now, they're going to have to overcome Jason Peters' loss, but overall, I mean, you can see why. They're becoming one of the top contenders in this conference.
Yeah, everybody in the NFC now with either 6 or 7 games under their belts, depending on whether or not they've had their bye week. The Eagles have the one loss. We have the Rams and the Seahawks out west with 2 losses. The Saints, who just beat the Packers, have only the 2 losses, and they're on a 4-game winning streak after an 0-2 start. Yeah. So beware of the New Orleans Saints. I think everybody was ready to say, oh, it's going to be Carolina or the up-and-coming Buccaneers with their young quarterback, Jameis Winston. But here we are getting towards the back half of October, and the New Orleans Saints are riding on top of that division. And then obviously in the NFC North, you have the Minnesota Vikings at 5-2, and they are headed to London to play a winless Cleveland Browns team. So a big opportunity for Minnesota to get to 6-2 at the halfway point here, and really try to stake their claim as to say they are the team to beat in the North.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting, I think, watching how this year unfolds and exactly what the backlash, if that's the right word, is going to be after the season, because there is something to be said for what Sean McVay has done with the LA Rams.
Yeah.
You know, mentoring and tutoring and bringing along a young quarterback. Obviously, that's the direction the 49ers are trying to go as well. But then you have Mike Zimmer, and you have the league's top-ranked defense. And in a day and age where I think a lot of general managers, a lot of owners, are hesitant about going with a defensive-minded head coach, I wonder if the Vikings are able to keep upon this route, keep on this path, if that's going to make people start, you know, kind of changing their mind a little bit. I fully expect as we go on, it's going to be about quarterback gurus. Those are going to be your head coaches because it is the most important position. But I think in some ways the Vikings are kind of rewriting the rule book a little bit on that. And credit where credit is due, they've built that defense. They had a vision for that defense. They're executing with that defense. And despite all the uncertainty at the quarterback position and what's happened this year, they are 5-2 because of that defense.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Philadelphia Eagles and the question of whether they can sustain it. The Minnesota Vikings are answering those same questions. They started 5-0 last year and fell apart, ended up 8-8 and missing the playoffs, which when you start 5-0 and miss the playoffs, that qualifies as a huge disappointment. A lot of the stories out of Minneapolis are that this is different. They're 5-2, which is right where they were last year when they lost 2 games after the 5-0 start. But the word is that it feels different in Minnesota, so now it's up to them to prove it.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to carry it out. And the other thing is, too, is we've seen this before, Michael. We've seen the Lions, the Bears, the Vikings, all these teams stake an early lead in the division only to lose it down the stretch. So the Packers, they're hoping that parity plays out. And Minnesota's hoping that they can, you know, find a way to extend that early lead.
Yeah, well, it'll be fun to follow it, and we'll have to keep an eye on that London game as the Packers are on the bye this weekend. But before we go to a break, today is a perfect day to fill up with some new Campbell's Chunky Max Soup. Chunky Max is loaded with more meat than you can handle, a lot more. We're talking 40% more than a comparable chunky soup. So go on, fill up with new Campbell's Chunky Max Soup. Campbell's Chunky Soup, the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, this is the bye week here, so it is an opportunity for the players and the coaches to get away, take a few days off, get a little bit of a break. We know some of the players will stay in Green Bay. Others will take short excursions elsewhere. You've been in contact with a particularly newly famous, I guess we'll say, Packers player, and he's going to have an interesting Saturday this weekend, it sounds like.
He certainly will, obviously talking about Aaron Jones. Before I start on that, I do want to mention it's funny how we're talking about everybody taking vacations, taking breaks, and yet we are right here, back in the studio.
We're still here.
Packers Unscripted.
All right.
But Aaron Jones has a fun week ahead of him, and basically what happened is – His brother, Elvin, his twin brother, Elvin Jr., was able to come up for his first Packers game last week because UTEP, his alma mater, was on a bye. So now this week, with it being the Packers bye week, Aaron is heading down to El Paso to watch his brother play in his senior year for the Miners. They're going up against Texas San Antonio. That game has extra special meaning, though, for Aaron Jones because it will be Aaron Jones bobblehead day. First time he said he's ever had a bobblehead made in his likeness. It's actually a photo that they used from a couple years ago. It's pretty spot on. Doesn't have as much facial hair then as he does now, but commemorating their all-time leading rusher. A nice little thing for him. And to give you an idea, that's the first 1,000 people, I believe it is. And if you get in, I think you get a game program. And then if you have like a sticker on page 29, which was his number at UTEP,
okay,
you get a bobblehead or something like that. So a neat honor for him to go back and obviously relish what he's accomplished now, but also at a school that has a lot of meaning to him.
Well, and the timing of it is interesting because obviously this was planned with him being the school's all-time leading rusher, this being the Packers' bye week. But now here he is. He's got 2 100-yard games as a rookie under his belt already. I'm sure he'll get a very, very nice welcome and ovation from the fans down in El Paso.
Yeah, he's the big man on campus. And I believe, if I remember right, he was the first player that was actually drafted out of UTEP since, I want to say, 2008. So he holds a lot of a lot of prestige at that university. And a nice thing too, he's getting a chance to watch Elvin play. First time that they actually aren't teammates, that he'll be at UTEP watching him. Elvin currently the leading tackler in the conference. So a nice opportunity to see his younger brother, or twin brother, excuse me, Aaron's the younger brother by 30 minutes, have a chance to play in front of a big crowd.
Yeah, I think it'd be nice to find some game film of the backyard, Jones versus Jones, the running back against the linebacker. That would be some that'd be some good footage for a documentary someday.
Totally. Aaron said that's the one that got him ready for the NFL.
Yeah, all right. With that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.